I'm Frank Vaughn. It's September 3rd, 2026, and on the quest to figure out the world and understand things, sometimes you have light bulb moments, and I've had one of them. But before we talk about issues of import, let's dispense with the frippery that seems to be consuming so much social media attention. Canada's Carney slaps Trump admin for doing memes and throwing shade. Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney on Tuesday blasted the Trump administration for doing memes and throwing shades against his nation. Amid a growing trade war, Carney's comments came in response to reporters' questions about Trump officials mocking Canada's military in social media posts and President Trump renaming Lake Ontario to Lake America. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't do anything, except on a psychological and political level, this works really good for Carney. And I'm going to tell you why. He looks like the adult at the table to the boomers who are keeping the Liberal Party in power. Once again, not all boomers. Want to make that clear, just the ones that are voting for the Liberal Party, they love this stuff. And then they see on social media, conservative influencers or right-wing influencers leaning into it and generating memes and having a great time laughing it up. And they see that as confirmation that the right is completely stupid. This is how the big red machine has achieved mastery. This is how they can parachute a Goldman Sachs central banker into Canada to manage its decline. This is how they can get the public to go along with him re-diverting public funds to private capital investments as the liberals who love the public sector and social programs that they are. They've signed on to public sector cuts and they love it. The big red machine doesn't just control what their masses think. It's not just a state of hypnosis. It's also controlling how they react to stimuli. That is the reactions of those that are outside of the control of the big red machine. So they perceive the right a certain way, and they know how the right will respond, and they've mastered this art. So anyway, that nonsense is what Canada is focused on. Here was the light bulb moment. There's a couple of them. Now, I've been sitting with this quote for the last almost 2 weeks now, but it's an important baseline for what comes next. Scott Bessent, that's the Treasury Secretary in the United States, trying to keep all the fires put out because the wheels have come off the bond market. The U.S. dollar system itself is under incredible strain. It's never been. Maybe it was this bad in the 70s when the whole thing almost fell apart. Setting that aside, it's under threat at a time when its decline is almost inevitable anyway. Bessent says he doesn't understand oil price spike after percent war escalation, but it's how he said it. I should actually have the video lined up because it would be more convincing, but I don't really care if I convince anybody of this. We've got a spike in oil prices today that I don't really understand. And I think that was a Freudian slip, saying that we did the things that we've been doing to control the price in the market. Now, there's two levels to the manipulation. One, you can look at all the insider trading and everybody that's making money in the Trump administration, much more factual and happening than it was in the first administration. It's happening. But set that aside. Part of manipulation is because of the fear of the political consequences come November of the increase in energy costs. And they have got the public hypnotically focused on oil prices that don't matter. The only thing that matters is how much gas is at the pump, and far more importantly, how much diesel is at the pump, something like $2.29 a liter where I am for diesel. So the spread between the barrel price of the oil and the actual cost of the diesel is called a crack spread, and it's at record highs. It's huge because the physical molecule energy isn't actually there. Now, they have paper manipulations that they try in the futures market to control that price that they've got everybody focused on, much like the big red machine has everybody focused on these memes, and that's how they generate their political capital today. This is one of the ways that the administration generates their political capitals, by getting people to focus on this futures price. And they do it by various financial means. So they tried to do something about the oil market, and it didn't work because the paper manipulations are they're failing in real time. We talked about this months ago. So they tried to intervene to save the yen. It didn't work. Now they tried to intervene in the bond market, which is insane. The bond market is bigger than global stocks. Like, it's huge and underpins everything. And the Treasury cannot control it, but they tried and they failed to do so. Now they tried to deal with oil prices, And it didn't work. Oil prices are still going up. They've been in one direction ever since the MOU was signed, other than a brief dip. Now, this is where things come into more focus. Scott Bessent blames Ukraine for gas prices. A former Ukrainian official says the Iran war matters significantly more. So this is where the light bulbs all went off. The administration recognized that when they started the war in Iran, it was going to create a massive price spike in oil, and they thought that they could control it. And one of the levers that they use is paper manipulation. But another lever is global supply. So leveraging global supply to make up the shortfalls and disruptions from the Persian Gulf being disrupted. And I think the United States, I don't believe, this is getting kind of arcane, but if you're trying to figure out Trump, you have to understand that there was a Trump that campaigned, there was an anti-war Trump that existed even past the first bombing campaign in June of 2025, the 12-day war, the so-called 12-day war. It's really just one big war with multiple chapters from that point. I know I often yield to the common parlance that we are 6 months into this war. We're actually almost 18 months into this thing, but I digress. It does not matter. When he did the 12-day war, I'm relatively convinced that he successfully, and I think I made videos to this effect, successfully avoided getting sucked in to the trap the Israelis were trying to make for the Americans, and that is to get them into this war in a way that they can't get out of, so that Iranian power can be checked directly, something Israel can't do. Israel can deal with Gaza, they can deal with Lebanon, they can deal with the West Bank, they can deal with their surroundings, but they can't deal with alone Iran, which is so much bigger, without going nuclear, and they can't deal with Turkey, and that's the thing that's coming up. At any rate, part of the, I believe Trump didn't want to get into it, but I believe that he was surrounded by people who did. And I think that's obvious. You know, I said that one of the smartest things Trump did to signal to his base when he was running the second time was Kushner and Ivanka were invisible. And I thought, man, that's a great signal. That means they won't be involved in this administration. Was I ever wrong? Kushner's got a central role. Witkoff, Bessent, these guys. So in the first administration, Trump was derailed because he was surrounded by traitors. He was derailed by the system. He got lost in the swamp. But I believe that his urge to deal with illegal immigration, to end the forever wars, to have a detente with Russia, which was completely destroyed in the first term, just didn't happen, not even an opportunity of it. And I believe that was because of the traitors around them and because of the way the system worked. Well, over the next 4 years, the same opponents, they're still out there. They're arrayed around Trump. There's these people who are trying to steer the world in a certain direction. And I think to a degree, Trump is happy to go along with that. I'm not trying to white knight the guy, but I think his vision is very America first. And he successfully avoided in his first term, I think it was 2017, he fired that missile that killed General Soleimani. And once again, he avoided, that was the first time he avoided getting locked into this war. I think he genuinely wanted to avoid this. I really do. But I think a psychological plan, an operation that is meant to undermine the Trump administration, succeeded in the first term in a way that it couldn't succeed in the second term. And over the chunk of time that he was out of office, I believe he was worked. So he's surrounded by loyalists, but those loyalists are very much intent to advance the plan to invade Iran, which has basically happened already. War with Iran, maybe not a direct invasion, but war with Iran. You're blowing people up, it's war. Whether it's legally constituted and constructed properly or fits the legal definition of war, which has been watered down by Orwellian doublespeak and gobbledygook, I guess you can argue that point. People getting blown up and weddings getting bombed and schools getting bombed and military targets getting bombed and everybody getting bombed and tankers getting bombed and the Middle East getting bombed. It's war, okay? So at any rate, that Adelson money starts coming in. He's surrounded by these neocons. Lindsey Graham becomes his best friend. Ben Shapiro becomes his champion online. And perhaps in that process of those things becoming the new reality, because all of these people were anti-Trump in the first term and throughout the Biden administration, now they're all best friends. Maybe Trump needed those political allies to get himself over the finish line, and he thought that he could resist getting caught in this Iran trap. And of course it failed, because we're there. It is now, it's becoming a forever war. I don't see it ending anytime soon. And I hope people can start to reckon with that at month six. I'm done belaboring the point. So he proceeds with his new friends, thinking that he can maintain control. And all the while, they're going overseas. They're the special envoys. They pretty much control the entire administration. And over time, we've seen a mass exodus of people that were very anti-war that were brought in. And some you can explain away, like Gabbard, people like Joe Kent. You can't really explain. There's a whole slew of names that have exited and been replaced by these neocon types who are very happy to execute the Iran war. At any rate, they would have been preparing for this conflict, even if Trump was going to check them. They would have to lay their plans. Which brings us back to the article on screen, the blaming of Ukraine for oil prices. So the plan, this is what I think the plan was now, this is the light bulb, is that, and I'm not trying to like overextend this or be dramatic, I'm just trying to explain how I arrive here. You would need a plan to replace the petrochemicals, as well as other chemicals, which actually I don't think they had a plan. You know, things like helium and the fertilizer, I don't even know if it landed on their radar. They're so obsessed with oil and oil alone. It's almost like the book of Revelation where it says, hurt not the oil and the wine. Doesn't matter how much the wheat is worth. Reading Besant's words, Ukraine has decided that they want to blow up Russian energy assets and refined products. So that is creating upward price pressure on a global basis. The American plan, the Besant plan, the Trump plan, was in order to conduct the Iran war, they were going to need Russian petrochemicals, flooding the market to make that gap up. Cheap Ural oil. It's still cheaper today. Russia is making a fortune. And so they, if you recall, before Ukraine really ramped up, they you see, lost in this mix, there's all of these different escalation traps. But Ukraine, at first, they gingerly targeted Russian energy infrastructure. They were sending their own signal. Look, Ukraine, the closest word I have for it is a golem. That's a Yiddish word. It's not a mindless Hulk, though. It is a psychopathic Hulk that is drunk on welfare. This regime in Ukraine is probably one of the worst things that you want to have the world centering on right now. The West is incredibly dedicated to it, and the Russians are dedicated to destroying it, and the regime itself is thoroughly corrupt and evil and selfish and sending millions of their own people to die in a war that doesn't need to be fought. It's the Ukrainian tragedy. We could do our own video on it. The administration wanted to come in. They wanted to pivot away from Ukraine, and they wanted to rely on that Russian oil. And Ukraine started hitting their energy infrastructure to demonstrate capacity. The West is giving them the weapons to do this, mainly Europe. We could get lost down that path as well. The bottom line is they started doing it. Then the Trump administration decided to cut sanctions against Russian oil to allow them to sell on the open market and gave them a temporary exemption for 1 month, which they then renewed. From that point forward, Ukrainian strikes on Russian energy infrastructure accelerated because Ukraine, the Ukrainian regime, the golem, is fighting for its survival. The Americans want to pivot and go and fight this neocon Israeli war in Iran, which doesn't need to be fought. And to do it, they were going to sacrifice Ukraine and the Ukrainian government and rely on that Russian oil. And it backfired so bad that while the war was going on, the second phase, this hot phase of the war, this last 6 months, the Trump administration removed sanctions from Iranian oil. This was before the Gulf was closed. Actions speak louder than words. They can project confidence all they want. Trump can tweet all day. He can do his Truth Socials. If we have time, we'll get to one of them, the most recent one. They can say whatever they want, but they're actions reveal their hand. All that is to say, at a bare minimum, you should understand that the confidence being projected on the economy, on the war, on the bond market, via the Trump administration, you should take with a heavy grain of salt. It should be obvious that things have not gone according to plan. Now, Iran, the regime in Iran, which the United States and the Israelis are dedicated to killing, regime change. Benjamin Netanyahu said the other day that regime change is still his goal. And I got to tell you, if it's his goal, it's the American goal. It's just the way things work in our world. But here's the people. Here is the Iranian regime. Its president at the SCO. Now, everybody's been focused on the Shanghai Cooperation Organization's condemnation of U.S. strikes in Iran. It says attacks violate international law and UN charter. If you read the statement, it's very strong. It's essentially condemning the United States and, in effect, condemning the U.S.-led global system. The SCO represents something like 20% of the world's oil production and 44% of its natural gas production. Rare earth minerals of its member states are off the charts. These are the people that, through other organizations like BRICS and like another organization we're going to talk about, are building an alternative to the U.S. system at a time when the U.S. dollar is weakening and the bond system is exploding and there's an AI bubble. Oh, it's the perfect storm, folks. I think it needs to be understood by everybody that the golden age ain't going to be easy. It ain't going to be so golden. But here is Iran at that summit. The president's on the main stage, positioned right beside Modi. There they are meeting together. There's Putin and Pezeshkian shaking hands and meeting. Pezeshkian and Xi met. They're not a pariah state in that part of the world. Iran is a core member, part of the future that they're trying to build. And the sanctions, which have seemed to have fallen off the radar the last couple of days. We're no longer talking about economic D-Day as much as maybe you would expect to be talking about it. They did some sanctions against Egypt, but it's not working. Everybody told the United States to pound sand. Kick us out of the U.S. dollar system. We'll figure it out. They're ready. They're ready to take that step. I'm sure they would like to plan it out more. I'm sure they could use a couple more years to lay all the groundwork just the way they want to. We're heading in this direction anyway. But if the United States wants to accelerate its own decline from dominance, they're more than happy to oblige. They're not going to stop trading with Iran. All you need to know is that the U.S. ability to create pariah states at a whim has faded before your eyes. That's why the SCO is welcoming Iran and standing with Iran. Maybe not all the way yet, but the harder the Americans push, the closer together that part of the world is being drawn. You see, if the U.S. really wanted to maintain its empire, which it can't do, I'm of the belief that it never could. I've been saying for the last 10 years that we are in the decline phase. We're probably 20 years into it. And the only thing that's left to do is pick how you decline. And my favorite landing spot is Fortress North America. I think that's what's best for everybody on the continent, provided it's constructed and constituted in the right way. Could be two independent nations. I don't know. Good for the people. That's what I'm looking for in getting out of the affairs of the rest of the world. At a time when the only thing the Imperial Americans could do is divide and rule, they're forcing these people together. It's just like the Russian-Chinese relationship. That is not a natural alliance. It's never been, and it's not today. They have competing interests. And the only time they get in bed together is when the West botches its diplomacy and pushes them together. And back to the beginning of this video, I firmly believe the Trump administration wanted to pivot to pro-Russia to use their energy. I thought they were trying to just create peace in the world as the campaign promised. Really, they were trying to get ready to go to war in Iran. But I repeat myself, Vladimir Putin arrives in Vladivostok yesterday. And eventually, he's probably going to give one of his 3 or 4 hour media events, which I will actually tune into because right now, and this is, people aren't going to like me saying that, but when it comes to listening to politicians explain the world, no one's better at it than Vladimir Putin. He's the most straightforward. Sure, he's looking after his national interests, but his understanding of the world has been top tier, bar none, for years. Listening to him, reading the translations, it's usually worth your time because it'll help you understand the world in ways you never will consuming media from the mainstream media or most of the influencer class. So on the back of the SCO conference, Vladimir Putin flies back to Russia to host the Eastern Economic Forum, the 9th annual, whose title this year is The Far East Development for the Benefit of the People. Whether you believe the rhetoric or not, it doesn't matter. They're coming together. Asia is coming together. Russia is becoming Asia-centric. That's where the energy is. Look, the United States and the Western system has a lot of fiat currency. And sure, there's some gold and there's some silver, and North America has lots of resources. That's the entire coming home to Fortress North America thing that I keep talking about. But the system that they're trying to hang on to, largely by the actions that are happening in Iran, the system where the U.S. dollar is the Ponzi scheme that holds up all the other Ponzi schemes, the thing that they're trying to hang on to has really nothing to do with those resources. The Asians have a lot more of those resources, and they're going to deploy a financial system built on top of those resources. And the thing that I just want to hammer home, and I'm sorry if I've come about this via a long path, neither the SCO or the Eastern Economic Forum have a Canadian or an American presence, not even as observers. We're not there. Now, I understand the United States not being there. They're trying to maintain their empire. But there are those who believe that Carney wants to tie us to China and wants to tie us to Europe. And there's some truth to those things, but only in exploitative and extractive ways after he continues the conversion of the public treasury into a private investment fund. You elbows up bozos. I'm sorry. I really don't like name calling, but the I have a hard time maintaining my composure. Even though I have a lot of respect for the Big Red Machine and how it has successfully hypnotized so many people, I have a really hard time with their ignorance, with their inability to listen, with how smart they think they are without actually being, and how much they love to lord their power over us, this base, the foundation of the liberal pyramid. If we were really trying to move in a genuine way closer to China, closer to Asia, we would have sent somebody to the SCO. We would have sent somebody to the Far Eastern Economic Forum. I know it's Russia. It's in Russia. Can't have Canadians going there. But the future of the world we're supposed to be tying ourselves to, is being decided in those meetings, which just fuels my skepticism about the authentic nature of this conflict between Carney and the Trump administration. I don't believe it. Carney's whole life, as I've said many times, lends evidence to this idea that he is not working to break Canada from the United States in a lasting long-term way. I think he's here, as he promised during the campaign, to visit economic pain upon us and reorganize Canada so it can be better absorbed in the way that that class wants us to be managed. And the elbows up people, they're just cheering it. And I know this is where I started, and then we went into the United States, and we went into Ukraine, and we went into Iran. I believe that the world can handle overlapping goals and positions, overlapping projects, overlapping political reorganizations and geopolitical plans at the same time. That mistakes can be made in one theater while plans are advancing in another theater. All of these things can exist at the same time. And if you want a nuanced understanding of the world, you have to realize that there are elements of truth scattered among all of the talking points. And the real game is trying to parse them all out. I'm Frank Vaughn. Thank you for your time. I'll see you in the next one.